This is episode 381. Are you experiencing burnout or have you before? It's becoming increasingly more common to be burnt out by life. Your work, your relationship, your menopause, your low testosterone, and your commitments, even if they're things you actually enjoy doing. If you've wrestled with low energy levels and poor commitment to things you need to and want to do, this episode is worth listening to because we chat about burnout. How it shows up, what's going on with your nervous system, how to build self-awareness so that you can identify the signs of burnout before it happens next time, and we enter a bit of a debate to figure out whether we're really burnt out, or maybe, in the modern day, we're all just snowflakes. Plus, at the very end, we give you quite a simple checklist for you to begin fixing your burnout and energy issues and getting you back to that full, energetic, passionate person you used to be. You ready? Let's dive in.
Welcome to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. You've tuned in because you want to start taking your health seriously so you don't, well, get sick and die. Here we talk all things health, nutrition, and human optimization. Let's jump into it with your host and resident scientist, Maddie Lansdowne.
What's up, my healthy friends? It's you, it's me, it's Anna hanging out here on this episode. But before we roll out the red carpet for this fabulous woman, I want to let you know that in 2024, it's my mission to coach 500 people to get control of their sugar cravings and sugar binges so they can stop yo-yo dieting, stop obsessing about food, and finally create a body that they feel confident being in. Now, we have exercise physiologist and mindset expert Anna Goldsworthy here with me today. Anna is many things, including a repeat guest featuring on episode 269 and 307, and now this one, and I'm just going to dive straight into it. Welcome back. What's going on?
Hi, Maddie.
How are you?
What's going on? Yeah, I'm good, thank you. I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm just heavy in the world of hustling but balancing, you know. What does it take to hustle but also remain sane and healthy? And, yeah, that's my world at the moment.
What does hustle mean to you?
Hustle to me means laser-focused.
Yeah.
Laser-focused, like, perseverance and clarity on what I'm doing so I don't get pulled in different directions.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little bit of grit in there, but not grit gone wrong.
What is grit gone wrong? What does that look like?
I think grit gone wrong is when people don't get themselves particularly well. So they're, you know, saying yes a bit too much, or, you know, there's something busier happening over in one domain of life, but I haven't pulled back on another domain of life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, yeah, grit gone wrong. I guess everyone would think of it at the moment as burnout.
Which, as I know, has been coming up a lot in your world lately.
Yeah, it's coming up a lot. There's a bit of the post-COVID world. It's like the new version of POTS as well, that trigger, which was previously in my clinic world. I work with people with POTS, adolescents and young adults in particular.
Yeah.
And the previous viral triggers seem to be a little bit going away, mm-hmm. whereas now it's POTS that's been triggered by COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that kind of fits into that whole nervous system support, muscles for nervous system, not muscles for the beach.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, muscles for your nervous system, not muscles for the beach. When you say that, what do you mean? Because I guess most people would think, I guess, in their mind, muscles and nervous system to be separate, although we probably mostly know that it's all one giant connection. But what do you mean by that?
So our muscles go because our nervous system tells them to. So if we divide our nervous system into the two parts that get talked about a lot, being the flight and fright system, this one that, and it gets put the bit of drama behind it, like, oh, you know, don't use it too much. But we really need to understand that it's a good system.
Mm-hmm.
It's just when we live in the emotional stress or psychological stress side of that system too much and don't give ourselves those huge breaks that we need from that, the brain to body connection from the nervous system then has an impact on our muscles just on a day to day level, what they feel like, our fascia, can we relax at the end of the day to go to sleep? And then there's the idea that the nervous system from a flight or flight tells us to go. It helps us to move. It helps us to go faster. And a lot of our health benefits come when we go fast and we choose to do difficult things and feel a bit of discomfort. So we regulate our nervous system, the fight and flight system, by doing hard and uncomfortable things. But the challenge becomes when those stresses aren't particularly well balanced. There's two interesting studies where they look at monks and stress levels.
Yeah.
And there's another interesting one where they look at Navy SEALs. So when they look at monks and emotional stress, and this would lean into the parasympathetic, I've kind of jumped over the calm part of our system that allows us to digest and do all those things. And the monks would be akin to that. When they give a monk a physical stressor, they have exactly the same emotional stress that we do, but when it's over, their stresses come down back to a level of parasympathetic that says, yep, you're done, that stress is over. But the parallel people that are doing that don't have that, you know, amazing skill of managing the mind and breath work and all those kinds of things, the stressor carries on. They're sort of looking and trying to predict in a way that maintains levels of stress in the body. And that's kind of like, if we think of it as a window of tolerance, it's narrowing that window of tolerance, you know, how quick we are to jump into sympathetic when it's maybe not a nervous system drive that's required. And then similarly with the Navy SEALs, this idea that they train themselves so effectively and we get amazing activation through things they're called myokines when our muscles work, that travel around our body and make our organs healthy, but particularly they travel into the mind as well and impact that the level of stress that we have in repeat emotional stresses after are less when we've pushed ourselves to high sympathetic or fight or flight tone. And those Navy SEALs also, they go to that level of stress that's required, but once it's done, the level of stress drops back down and we're back in that neutral zone again. So it's muscles are like, it's a way for us to train our system from a biological, physiological level. And then we kind of, you know, our head and our mindset comes into play from the psychological about how we impact our nervous system, which then sort of floats over to choices that we make as well, whether we choose to use our muscles or not to the level that we should be, to give ourselves that reliable body and strong mind. Yeah, so switching on our nervous system or thinking about our muscles in that way, I find it personally a much more longevity-based conversation rather than, oh, it's coming up to summer, I better work on the size of my muscles.
The thing that I think about when it comes to conversations around nervous system activation and fundamentally stress is I'm always torn, and I don't know if you've experienced this, I'm torn between increasing the window of tolerance versus there is just too much stimulation. Because if we think about in this example, or you talked about the studies, but I'm going to take it to an example, monks, they get to go back to a place where there's no stimulation, right? And,
yes.
And I understand it takes training and I'm not minimizing that at all. But if we compare the monk that's like, all right, stress is over, go back to the temple where there's nothing bad and it's all just in my head and, you know, I get to sit down for 14 hours and it's amazing, versus let's say the Navy SEAL and or the mum with four kids that's, you know, trying to do her career and navigate her partner and her life. You know, the Navy SEAL goes, let's say in this example, back into the war zone, right?
Yeah,
and so it's overstimulation. And so I'm always torn between we need a bigger window of tolerance and need to get stronger versus we need to just chill out a bit more.
Yeah, I get that's a perfect example and I get where you're going. But I would imagine it would be so interesting. I feel blank on my mind wants to wander and think about the monk scenario more because when we look at health, we see that balance of, you know, what do our muscles need to do in intensity to gather that health span rather than a lifespan. But when I think of the war zone concept, that kind of makes me go, I feel like that over time would break someone down.
Mm.
And that the things that we can manage from a capacity level would chip away at us, and that's not a place that we could stay. Whereas my impression of the monks is that's a place we could stay and remain healthy. And then the mum with the four kids trying to juggle it all, that's where we land in the burnout game, particularly with females. There's a higher percentage of females. And I had a little look at the UK 2024 burnout report, and I can read for you because my memory with numbers is horrible.
Read away.
That women are even more susceptible to burnout, with 93% experiencing extreme stress compared to 88% of men.
Mm.
Yeah. And I think the numbers at the moment in general are still sitting at about 62% of people in workforces are saying they're under significant stress, and potentially even more than the previous year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you think over courses of generations, we have gotten stronger or weaker in the idea, and maybe weak is a bit of a judgmental word, but less capacity or more capacity to deal with stress? And I say that because I'm a millennial. Are you a millennial?
I've got to look at the dates. I think I just line in.
Yeah. So we're the first generation of snowflakes, basically, right?
I'm on the border. I hung out with the ones before. I think I end up in this weird place. And I would like to say, as a country kid, that, you know, I've got a bit of that in me as well.
Yeah. Well, I feel a bit the same. I grew up as a country kid, right? And I feel like country kids are just a bit tougher than city kids. but I wonder, like, are we getting stronger or are we losing capacity? And is it, because it almost feels like all of this research and all of this study and all of this introspection, which is arguably what monks have been doing for you know, tens of thousands of years, it's like it's highlighting all these labels and problems that we don't have the capacity to properly address because we're not in the monk environment.
Mm. Yeah, and I think it is interesting. Is it like if we swang all the way back to, you know, our parents' generations,
mm-hmm.
we talk about the challenges of lack of mental and emotional connection with parent figures, and then, mm-hmm. you know, the roughness of that generation having to get through, and that mental toughness versus, yeah, like it is interesting. I do think we have a fear of stress, mm-hmm. and that we need to get stress back into context, and that if we look at the genome of a human, it actually requires a level of stress. Mm-hmm. I would say that self-awareness needs to come into play with that, because there's, to your point, so many more stimulus and overwhelm coming from outside, that how do we figure out what is the level that we can work to where we mm-hmm. feel our health, our connection to our values, a connection to what matters is in scope, and that we can have, you know, more like a wave approach to stress rather than we're climbing a hill and we will get to the top no matter what.
Yeah.
And in training or in sports, we call this periodization, so that the wave approach slowly takes us to where we need to be, but we don't generally apply that in life concepts. But when we look at that hunter-gatherer genome, which hasn't changed, you know, for 45,000 years, and that expects and demands us to move and have stress in our life to maintain that healthy genetic representation in our body, then we start to see where this fear of stress becomes a problem for that exact experience. Is we need stress, but we need stress within our own context. you know, the email that comes through and that sits on your mind for 7 days because the person hasn't replied, or was my reply good enough? Like, it's that little micro stresses where we don't get to let go, and that psychoneuroimmunology kind of interplay where the stressor was good, but I haven't put it down. Yeah. So I think we're a bit too scared of stress physically, mentally, emotionally, and we've got to learn how to have that relationship with stress again. And that's, you know, the Goldilocks effects of it all, really. We need the phrase hormesis. So we want not enough stress is problematic for us. Too much stress is problematic for us. So how do we have a relationship with ourselves and our health that lands us in the middle, and we can kind of swing along that spectrum and make reasonable decisions, and also that are purposeful, deliberate, and also know when we've gone off track. So, yeah, getting right into stresses is, I think that's where, what was the word you thought was a bit judgy? We've become a bit weak on stresses.
Yeah, but I'm also, I feel very drawn to this resurgence of traditional masculinity. So, like, there's a big part of me that's like, yeah, don't be a weak little bitch. Like, you know, I'm like, maybe not as extreme as David Goggins, but I feel very attracted to the idea that, yeah, I acknowledge that modern society has weakened me, and I'm okay with that word because it motivates me.
Yeah.
But I can understand why other people would be like offended by that word, no?
Yeah. It's such a tricky juggle. I know my movement schedule and my partner's movement schedule has recently just dropped right off because our work life has completely changed. Mm-hmm. He's a draftee and a tradie on tools. So he's gone back to doing more on tools. So our schedule has completely changed.
Yeah.
So to my point that I coach people around is, how does your health fit in with your life? Mm-hmm. And at the moment, we haven't fully recalibrated into that. And I'm losing my fitness and capacity the, you know, more and more that goes on. So we've got to kind of figure out how to recalibrate, because life's not the same every day. Yeah. Figure out our philosophy about how we're going about it. Yeah. And then work into what do those stresses look like that feel good to us? What's that motivating dialogue that feels right on what matters to us? And yeah, regaining whatever, you know, whatever character description it is for you to be mentally, physically, emotionally capable to do the things in your life that you want to do.
Yeah. Do you think that there's a lack of context that people give in that self-awareness, which results in us giving a disproportionate amount of attention, value, and stress to the email from the colleague that you don't really know? Like, what do you think's going on there for us adding all of this extra stress to something that, you know, in its own situation, in isolation, it's not that stressful and it's kind of meaningless?
Yeah.
And one way that I think about this, and I don't know if this resonates with you, is that in the transition from us going to, you know, caring about being hungry, caring about finding a mate, caring about these primal parts of ourself, that we kind of have, and I'm sort of using quotation marks, we've got autoimmune disease of the mind. Mm. And if we think about allergies of children, and often, you know, new parents that alcohol their kids' hands every 5 seconds, it's common knowledge generally in my world that parent, that kid is going to have allergies, right? Because the hygiene hypothesis says if the immune system's bored, it's got to find work to do. And I'm, you know, throwing around some general terms. But I think about that with the mind, and it's that now we're not dealing with real meaningful problems to do with our biology. The mind is now giving disproportionate weight and care and value and stress to really meaningless things because our food is provided for so much so that we have problems with overeating. You know, and it's easy to find a mate because, you know, sexual values have changed and apps exist. And so I wonder if, you know, what the lack of context is or what context we can add to put these things back in proportion.
Yeah. And it's interesting, right? Because we're, in theory, the richest we've ever been. Life's as easy as it's ever been. We've got things at our fingertips, yet we're the sickest and unhappiest that we've ever been as a collective. There's two things that pop up. There's a case study in my mind, which I'll come back to.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it does tap into self-awareness in the sense that as much as I want to do hard things and I say I want to do hard things and I want my body to change, that really peters down to your ability to commit to beliefs that are unhelpful, stories that you need to unlearn, and those things that are sitting in under your operating system and directing your choices. So the case study that popped into my mind as you were chatting then is a woman who was in a particularly tricky time of her life, and we were going through a little coaching period. She has a high-level job and quite a tricky job, lots of responsibility, but she feels pretty comfortable in that job. She feels very skilled and, you know, that's not a stress. So less the email example, but more that there was this funny little loop there where we're looking at where are my stresses, where are my macro, micro stresses. And one of her macro stresses was she had this pattern of getting a project, something landing in her email, seeing, you know, what's required, ticking some fast wins, but then the actual thing, that the big part that needed to be done, as soon as she'd done some easy wins, she'd stop. And then inevitably 4, 5, 6, however many weeks would go by before it was due, and then she would be absolutely hitting, like, through the roof, having to focus on it to get it done in that last little bit. And her question to herself was, how much better could I be doing this if I gave myself the full 6 weeks?
Mm.
Like, what could I be delivering and achieving? So that was the question that we were trying to answer to. She wanted to kind of solve that problem and get rid of that pattern and habit. So we ended up digging down to, it was the things that she'd learnt from her father in particular, and that he was a particularly threatening figure around particular rules that he'd hung around and delivered as a kid. Mm-hmm. So we're here sitting at our respective ages, but we've still got a teenage, a toddler, a whatever version of us inside us. So it was her younger version popping up. And often what she would find herself doing was getting up, and she was working from home, so she would busy herself at home. So we eventually figured out that whenever there was something that was of that ilk to do, the feeling that sat under it was, you've got to get it perfect, and don't come to me unless it's perfect. Don't bother me unless you're done. This real military kind of approach to finishing things. So she would avoid that sort of internal experience by going off and busying herself with things that she could do easily, get rid of that discomfort, and then, you know, we just avoid that till it's absolutely required. So I think under there is this idea that every time we have a trigger, like, what's this chasm that's created between your reasonable response, how long does that stressor last for, and what was behind that trigger in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting playoff on burnout as well, because a lot of the theories is, you know, athletes can get burnout. So it's not like it's a lack of physical health.
Mm-hmm.
People that care deeply about their work and are passionate get burnout. So it's not about your want to do the job or that you're detached from it, but this idea that there's micro stresses constantly through our working day. And then arguably, you know, how do we define work? Like, what is hard work? Volunteers do hard work. Parents do hard work. You're at work, you do hard work. So then it just bleeds out how much mental, emotional recovery you're getting in these other places in terms of carrying that email around and not realizing that you're carrying that email around in the back of your mind for, you know, every interaction that you're having with every other loved one, or time, you know, time to put it down and be fully present while I'm talking to Maddie.
Mum, mother, grandmother, nan, nana, and women with no kids. Have I got your attention? So I want you to imagine something. Go with me here. Imagine a life where even when you wake up tired and the kids are driving you mad and work sucks and things are problematic, that you're still in control of your food and you still make healthy choices without giving up and binging on chocolate and wine and saying, I'll try again tomorrow. It might be hard to imagine, but having freedom with your food is absolutely possible. And it starts by getting three things right. One, having a supportive community, building a strong connection with fellow emotional eating warriors. Two, having the right information delivered in the right way. And three, having a guide that can shine a light on the right path and have your back along the way. And that's me. Those three things are exactly what we've got for you inside the Healthy Mums Collective Facebook group for people just like you wanting to end their emotional eating and feel good in their own skin again. And currently, it's free to join. The link is in the show notes below. If you've struggled with diets or felt powerless around food, you're not alone. But let me assure you, this is a community that understands your battles and is ready to empower you into action. So what can you expect on the inside? Well, we have posts and content that push you a little out of your comfort zone. We do Facebook Lives, have interactive Q&A session, and it's simply a safe space to face your food challenges and be honest without concern of being judged. If you decide to join us, I have a complimentary How to Turn Food into Self-Confidence ebook for you as well, completely free. The Healthy Mums Collective thrives on support, authenticity, and experience-based practices. It's a community, so the beautiful people in it is where the magic comes from. To join us and be a part of that magic, head to the show notes, click the link, breeze through a few quick questions, and you'll be in the Healthy Mums Collective before you know it. Again, the link is in the show notes below. I'll see you in the DMs or on the welcome post in just a few moments.
Yeah, I have heard, I don't know if you've heard this, but the idea that burnout can only happen when you're living or acting out of accordance with your core values. I personally refuted that with that person at the time. But what are your thoughts on that idea?
I think it can get you there. It can I think being very closely aligned with your values allows you to understand your capacity deeply. Mm-hmm. You're better at saying no when it's uncomfortable and not carrying that stress around. You're better at saying yes. You're better at understanding that laser focus like we talked about at the start. So if we talk about managing hustle and understanding your role, I think that's where self-awareness and alignment with values plays a huge role in prevention and recovery of it, because it's certainly by definition, it's this idea that there's excessive stressors that are beyond your capability and resources that doesn't stop.
Yeah.
So that personal responsibility versus the at work responsibilities of an organization, which isn't my game.
Well, my thoughts are too that, because you gave the comparison of like parents and people working and then athletes, is I think too that the stresses can come from the area of that's not of dedication, right? So it's like for the athlete, maybe the training is like fuel, you know, sure that it physically burns them out, but they could do that for much longer than the rest of us because they love that. They're attracted to it. It lights them up. But the areas of their life that they're dragging themselves through are the work, are the relationship, are the kids, you know, and that's, they're getting sucked. Their energy is sucked or their values are pushed in different ways from those things. But we often focus our attention on where are you spending the most time. And so it's like, it could be work absolutely fuels you. The catch is that when you leave work, your energy is low and now you've got to deal with a heap of stuff you actually aren't lit up about. You actually aren't excited about. And so it's like, how can you either delegate, outsource, or reorganize those relationships in a more helpful way?
Yeah. And I've got two stories for that one. So the fella, because what, in a way, what you're describing is when we first start a work role, there's a honeymoon period where there's excitement, there's novelty, I see my value, there's a connection that feels usually more, I guess, aligned with, I understand my purpose here. And then often mm-hmm. where burnout gets becomes problematic is the resources drop off. My job role as defined isn't panning out as it was. I'm not being rewarded for my efforts or seen or acknowledged for my efforts as much. And then it kind of works, you know, flows into stuck, overwhelmed, exhausted, the cynicism that comes along the way through these kind of phases of burnout. Mm-hmm. So in that honeymoon period, we can potentially abandon ourselves if we don't have strong boundaries around our values or understand how we think, behave, and speak when we're aligned with our values and what that is. Mm-hmm. And it certainly, from that kind of athletic point of view, and that's where it's more heavily psychological, and the burden is very heavy on the individual because it's not a diagnosis per se.
Yeah.
It's a syndrome, and then that puts the onus on you as a failing because, you know, the guy next to me started at the same time, and why are they fine and I'm not? So, and the irony that we end up pushing more to kind of solve the problem in those scenarios. But we can have someone that's doing a similar job, has fallen into the cynicism, you know, and then their physiology is starting to become this nasty loop where it doesn't reinforce. When we're not in a good physiological state, we do, you know, we're withdrawing from activity, we're withdrawing from social, and then the tendency towards depressive moods and anxious moods start to elevate, and they are distinctly different than to burnout, and that can be kind of defined relatively easily. But this idea that we can have this person and then we give them a recovery and we put them in a job where they're in control, they're highly passionate, but they're working more hours, but they know how to balance and manage their values better.
Yeah.
It's sometimes not always the workload that happens there. And then the other example is me, because I had burnout, I would say, after the end of me shutting down my first business.
Yeah,
was due to burnout. My mm-hmm. body was completely struggling. I had, you know, it's not embarrassing, but it's interesting to me as a health practitioner that I got there without fully knowing. And that's a tricky thing for people as well, is you think you're just working hard, so you're meant to be tired, and that's reasonable. The exhaustion's fair. So I couldn't put body weight on. I really struggled to put body weight on. But to your point, and then I couldn't exercise as well. My immune system was out the window. It was, you know, my stress levels were high. My anxiety was high. But my work was my happy place. And I just mm-hmm. had shocking boundaries around how much I was doing, needing to contribute to the business in a particular way. And then the more I dug into that, the more I detached from my family life. It didn't feel rewarding. The honeymoon was over there because I was like, you know, you're working on the weekend. What do you do? You know, you're home late and all this, these challenges in terms of home life, which ironically just made me feel more like staying at work.
Yeah, of course.
So it became this really nasty thing, and I needed that big slap in the face of my health completely failing to realize that I was the problem in the way I was making choices and the environment that I'd created about with myself. So ironically, I was the organization and the employee at the same time.
Can relate. Thank you for sharing that, by the way.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. It was hell of a time. It took quite a long time for me to recover.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to be able to exercise again with about my immune system completely dropping out. And it was a long time, but I got there.
Yeah. Yeah, I can relate to that. And just because you've shared, I want to share too. For me in 2023, I was so burnt out. For a lot of that year, I spent like 4 hours, which is only last year, you know, on the date of this conversation, but I spent about 4 hours a day on the couch in the afternoon. And it was going on kind of for years. And I was like, come on, you're Maddie Lansdowne. You run the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. Like, figure your shit out. And yeah. I was bouncing between, is it psychological and, you know, coaching myself and being like, what am I attached to? What's going on? Mm. And then looking into stuff like, oh, you know, because I'm burnt out, apparently this means I'm not very passionate or connected to the work yes. that I'm doing. And then thinking, am I in the wrong business? Am I doing in the wrong career because I'm burnt out? And apparently if you feel amazing about it, you never get burnt out. And then I was like, okay, now maybe I'm depressed. What am I depressed about? And it took me ages to figure out what it was. And you know what it was? I moved house and everything changed in 3 days.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. I tested for mold. I still don't know. I still do not know. But I tested everything, hormones fine, blood's fine, you know, and then I just moved house and I felt better.
Oh, wow. That's, yeah, a lot of burnout people would like that level of recovery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It took me years to actually be like, okay, it's the house.
Yeah, move.
Right. Yeah. So I probably could have saved myself 2 years of, yeah, mental conversations and self-loathing and of being weak and pathetic and all of the things and not getting over my long-term relationship that had also ended in that same house and
yeah.
all of the other factors that go into that. But it was crazy how fast it recovered when I was like, fine, I'll move. Like, I was like, oh my God, there was just bad juju in the house.
Yeah, wild. That's it brings a point though, right? Because it is hard. It's really hard to see yourself when you're in it. And there is that, oh, you know, I'll be fine until you're really not. And that depersonalization and there's another kind of element where your efficacy of, you know, what you're passionate about starts to kind of wane back. And it doesn't feel good, does it, as a purposeful person.
No, you feel like a massive fraud.
Yeah. Yeah. And giving that energy, you give a lot of energy when you do this style of work and you're like,
yeah,
I either give it and put the mask on and then that's exhausting mm-hmm. or I just can't get to that level that I know I should deliver at, and that feels unsatisfying as well. So it is a bit of a nasty loop in terms of feeling like a failure. Yeah.
Oh,
and we want
to
get people out of that as quickly as possible.
Oh, and then some of that time I was like, hey, Maddie, you need to take your own emotional eating program, you dickhead.
Yeah. Give me some comfort. Give it to me quick.
Totally. But you were talking about before, like developing self-awareness, and it made me think that I've had a couple of team members working with me for a couple of years now, one of which Channy will edit this episode. Shout out to Channy. But I get all of them, anyone that works with me for more than just a couple of weeks, to do kind of like a love languages for work test.
Yeah.
And it's really useful because I understand how they feel acknowledged and validated, knowing that I also, you know, like to feel acknowledged and validated in particular ways. And that gives me energy, right? To be able to continue on. And it's not like, you know, I'm working for this man and he sucks and he never recognizes me or he won't give me a pay rise or whatever the thing is that's important to that individual. So my question to you was, what self-assessment or self-awareness tools, apart from catastrophic collapse and burnout, can people like look into or use or that you use to help people start putting a mirror up and fully recognizing, oh, this is me. This is how I operate.
Mm. I will put a little snippet into the love language thing as well. This is a stat I learned the other day.
Yeah.
Oh, the number of, testing my memory, the number of people that require sick leave for burnout, of that number, 52% of them have ADHD.
Interesting.
So fitting into the how I need to operate as a system in a work environment seems to be a significant macro stressor for people with ADHD. Yeah, there's a link with anxiety in there as well. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, perimenopause. So,
of course.
Yeah. So my big thing is the things that I say and the things that people say. So the cynicism starts to come out a little bit more, and you'll hear yourself saying things that are, for want of a better phrase, more like your teenage self, like, oh, you know, you, to your partner, it'll be like, oh, a bit sort of sad in the sense of, oh, don't be mad at me, or don't be upset at me, or don't give up on me, like those types of things, versus the flip being more towards the blame, shame, defense, things where I'm, there's more arguments on board, there's more pressure with time. I'm tired, so I'm not emotionally available for you anymore. Yeah. So to me, it's the having that self-awareness around, again, to your point, the things that you say that don't really align with your values.
Yep.
And I love the activity of just sitting down, picking one of your core values, and even if it feels uncomfortable, what are the things that you can practice as the version of you that you want to be in 6 months' time, 10 years' time? What does that person say often or in particular environments that is protective of that value and the way they're seeing your boundaries and your energy?
Yeah, it's super interesting.
It's a big tool, and you're always encouraged to observe yourself, kind of like an alien. Someone's watching you and going, well, just see how this person operates. So it's not a judgment piece. We don't get in there and then start blaming and shaming ourselves, but we do want to pause and go, okay, what do I say that leaves me stuck? And what could I move that to that's more aligned with a value that fits in with my health and fits in with me moving away from this? And some people do find that really uncomfortable. I think the easiest example is when someone gives you a compliment and we kind of wriggle around, and rather than just honoring the moment where someone's done something nice, so your response should be thank you. And that can be physically uncomfortable for people to say thank you. And also, to the point, our beautiful vagus nerve, which is parasympathetic around, but also it works with our vocal cord. So when we shoot off on this sort of stress of
deflect,
you know, this whole kind of, can I voice myself and represent my values in that moment? So sometimes there's this wonderful little intertwine of, oh, I notice I'm panicking. That's me abandoning myself. I'm about to abandon myself with my words.
Yeah.
What would it take for me to re-engage with myself and represent the version that I want to be?
I think, to an extension of what you've just shared in regards to deflecting compliments, is it highlights a rejection of self as well, because we're basically saying, I hold myself to a higher standard, and if you accepted me at this standard, you're an idiot because I'm shit.
Yeah. And it's such a distracting thing. It's really, it abandons the relationship. Mm-hmm. It doesn't allow you to connect with that person. Yeah. So teaching those tools of a flip, or just being able to say thank you and honoring what you create, because you really do disconnect from people when you kind of fumble around and don't just take a compliment or say, oh, you know, what made you say that? You know, how can we stay connected with that person? Because connection, well, for me, it's an important value. It's up there with the core ones.
Yeah, absolutely. And the irony is, in that moment of self-rejection, you're also rejecting their kindness.
Them, yeah.
Yeah. Zero points for building connection.
You're out. But it definitely takes practice.
Oh, it totally takes practice. That's one of the places I started for just learning to work on this myself, because I grew up, you know, never feeling good enough, and actually still kind of leverage that in a more healthy way to push myself, because I know what I'm capable of, but also can catch myself to be like, hey, what are you doing? Why are you saying that? But one of the first things that I used was just, when I get compliments, say thank you, and just sit in it and just be like, yeah, this is great, isn't it? Amazing. Yeah. You know, even if I know I can do better, this baby step was awesome.
Yes. The gap we were talking about before with the trigger versus the, oh, I'm realizing it now. We're just narrowing that gap a little bit. We can't all wear capes, you know, just a little step. step.
I'm hopefully at some point I'll graduate to being able to wear a cape.
Yeah.
I guess so. My last thought before we begin to wrap up is just more around people that are in the middle of their burnout right now.
Mm-hmm.
That are listening to this and they're sort of like, oh, yeah, that's me, that's me, that's me. You know, what's step one? Where can they begin to sort of start digging their way out of the hellhole that they're in with all the stimulation and all the competing priorities and that kind of thing? Where can people start?
If we're sort of in that, you know, we're definitely in there, and there is a tool that you can assess your burnout, and it gives you burnout risk, kind of likelihood and all those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to check in with what is my body telling me that I haven't been listening to, and then mm-hmm. picking your team of practitioners that you could go to from there.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, I couldn't put on body weight, so I needed to go to my nervous system skills, and I needed to go to my nutrition skills, and then outsource as well.
Mm-hmm.
Who can I talk to around that so that my body has enough robustness and I can control my glucose levels in that space? As we've talked about, values, so someone that can talk to you, coach you, support you through what stories need to be dismantled, you know, what's in this space where we can narrow that gap in terms of emotional responses to triggers or stresses,
mm-hmm.
and be able to let them go. So that can be it can be pretty broad, right? It can be someone like me. It can be maybe you've got a breathwork coach you worked with before, or maybe you've got a yoga person that you can go to. But I guess it's with the context of understanding that I want to feel the difference that's happening in my body, so that when stressors are coming up, I get to go, ah, oh, I'm having an excessive arousal or stress response to this scenario because I can feel it in that interoception of my body. So I think in that space, we need wildly more rest. So how do you take more opportunities to create rest in your life? So, and not rest, it can be rest, like actual rest, but reduced arousal. So that can be sound, it can be, you know, stimulus of any kind in that
way.
Get
rid of your phone.
Yeah, that's Maddie's vote. How can we do that? And to your point, how can I see when I'm going to something to numb out?
Mm.
And what is another option that is more balancing on my hormones and neurotransmitters that helps me to take a nervous system break rather than, you know, digging ultimately, ironically, digging further into those resources? Sleep becomes really, really important. So can you sleep? What's going on with your sleep? And can we get a few more hours of sleep into your schedule? And then from an exercise point of view, if you're deep in, there's not many people that would likely be exercising heavily at that point of burnout because they are exhausted. But for those that maybe are or wondering, taking a period of time moving away from exercise that requires high sympathetic nervous system drive, so higher intensity exercise, long volumes of exercise, and moving into things that help us to reinforce the parasympathetic nervous system more is kind of where those first things come into play, the little bucket of where we'd want to start to regroup and retrain the nervous system. And sometimes that can be done with a reduced workload, and sometimes it can't. So that starts to dictate the pace or the expected time of feeling better.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because a lot of people, and maybe the medical model is to blame for this societal idea, but a lot of people just want the quick thing. They're like, just give me the pill, you know? And the idea that we actually have to take hours out of our week consistently for many weeks can be a little bit too much for people to think, oh, I've actually got to like do three hours a week of this thing. Like, don't you just have a video you can send me or a tablet I can take?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the other thing that's helpful in that world is if people can get to know their ultradian rhythms, so not actually just powering through the day with constant levels of stress, and that is kind of twofold, right? Because the challenge of taking a break in work hours, our mind nags us. You could be doing this, you could be doing this, could be doing this. But from a performance and optimization point of view, the irony is that by taking that break, you can be more productive. Your capability and capacity is much higher when you sit with the discomfort and get used to having really effective breaks during the day and putting your brain, it's like taking your brain out and putting it on charge again so that you can turn up with a level of bandwidth to interact with people in a reasonable way and do your work in the most effective way possible. So that's a kind of nice little trick that you can we work into to figure out where we can put more parasympathetic into it. And it's, I think it's important in terms of sleep as well and those challenges in there. But that would be my take for people, is reach out for people in your world that mm-hmm. can answer to those things, and it will be unique to what's happening in your body. So pause and ask your body what's screaming the loudest, and yeah, go to those people, because there'll always be, you know, some foundation that will then lead back to, okay, let's work on this with the side note of sleep. Let's work on this with the side note of reducing micro stresses.
Yeah, yeah, great. I think that was a fantastic sort of checklist for people to begin working through. And I guess each individual can identify which feels like the biggest gap to them. But as you said, reaching out to people that can support, and you're one of those people. So where can people find you on the internet?
On the internet. My website's Anna at, what is it, annamovement.com.
Mm-hmm.
On LinkedIn, there's my little professional page, which is Anna Movement, and just my name for my regular page, which is Anna Goldsworthy. And then my Instagram or Facebook have the same handles, Anna.movement.
Amazing. For anybody listening, which is probably thousands of people at this point, please scroll down to the show notes below, click the links, jump into Anna's world. She's amazing. Check her out on episode 269 and 307, which we've done previously on the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And to wrap up another fantastic session with you, Anna, what is one piece of health information that you wish more people knew about?
Let's go with the current theme mm-hmm. of figure out your Goldilocks range. It's not one tiny little thing, but the range that you can kind of swing to where it's not too little, it's not too much, and bring interoception. I think we've neglected interoception as a sense. Like mm-hmm. we've got our eyes, we've got our hearing, we've got taste, and we need to bring interoception back into the game.
Amazing. You know, you call it the Goldilocks zone, but I think you should rebrand and trademark it as the Goldsworthy zone.
The Goldsworthy zone. I was actually nicknamed Goldilocks by a lovable sort of pseudo uncle when I was little. So I've got a connection with Goldilocks, but that doesn't help me trademark anything, does it?
Anyway, thanks for hanging out again, and we'll obviously get you back soon.
Thanks, Maddie. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast, simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.